Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome David Thompson to the broadcast. David is the Executive Vice President of Global Operations and Technology and the Chief Information Officer at the Western Union Company, a $5.5 billion revenue financial services and communications company that provides transaction services around the world. In his role, David oversees Western Union's IT infrastructure that supports the company's payment products and services in over 200 countries and territories. David's also the independent director of CoreSite, a leading data center provider. Prior to joining Western Union, David served as CIO in several companies, including Symantec, Oracle, and PeopleSoft, in addition to other roles. David studied computer science at American University and management and operations at Marymount University. I recently spoke with David in his office in Denver. Our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as we covered David's thoughts regarding how best to safeguard his company's data. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how he has built partnerships to facilitate innovation and the role that IT plays in enhancing customer experience and supporting the engineering team's new technologies. We also covered his thoughts on increasing significance of omnichannel experience in financial services, the real-time risk assessment tools his team uses to address changing regulations, and a variety of other topics. This is one in a series of interviews with financial services CIOs conducted in collaboration with CIO Straight Talk magazine. Read an article on David Thompson, along with articles by other technology executives, at www.straighttalkonline.com.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. David Thompson, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. It's great to talk to you. I thought we'd begin, David, with your set of responsibilities. You're the Executive Vice President of Global Operations and Chief Technology Officer of Western Union. But obviously, as the name would suggest, you have operations responsibilities, you have technology responsibilities. Can you talk a bit about peeling back the onion a little bit more about your purview?
Certainly. So I feel like I have two jobs, realistically. First and foremost, I have responsibility for global operations, which is the management of our customer experience, and so all of our customer care centers and interactions with our customers. In addition to, we have a very broad network of partners and agents that service our customers and provide the service globally. Both of those areas require a lot of staff, and so it's a very large portion of our employee population that services our customers' needs or services our agents. So enrolling an agent, training their staff, doing the certifications around AML, and then managing the infrastructure associated with our agent network. Then on the customer care side of the house, it's really a responsibility to make sure that we have a strong end-to-end process that our customers go through, and if a customer has a problem in that process, we have a mechanism for them to interact with us either electronically or via phone, and we can resolve that issue. The other portion of my job is as the Chief Technology Officer for the company, the entire technology portfolio for our customers, our agents, our partners, and the regulators for the company. And that is an exciting part of my job in that I've joined the company as the CTO at a point when we're truly transforming what we're doing and bringing new capabilities to the market, but at the same time, enhancing the services that we have today.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about those very enhancements in a moment, but how do you structure your team? Do you have two distinct teams? Are there any other people like yourself that span across both of those? How is it done?
So I have a team of 15 direct reports, and about half of those direct reports are responsible for our customer care and our operations function, servicing our agents, training our agents, supporting our customers via call center or through our electronic channels, right? And then we also have a series of engineering heads that are responsible for developing new products, and this is on the technology side of the house. Engineering capabilities, information security, our global operations, technical operations, that's our data centers, it's all of our server infrastructure, both in the cloud and on-premise.
And you began to mention in both your responses some of the new things you're doing from a payment products and services perspective. I know this is an area of great innovation for the company. I wonder if you can tell us a bit about some of what's going on there.
Certainly. So in the last few years, we've been investing in an omni-channel experience as our consumers and business customers are starting to interact with us. In our history, we've had a long history of a retail brick-and-mortar infrastructure through our agent network and 500,000 locations in 200 countries. We're seeing significant growth in our new channels, which are kiosks in remote locations or in banks or postal services, and also in mobile applications. We're seeing dramatic growth in our customer acquisition through the mobile channel, where customers are downloading our mobile application globally and then in initiating a transaction via Western Union or a bill payment via Western Union. So much of our investment has been around that omni-channel experience, and we've also created some new capabilities around compliance. Compliance has been, because the regulatory environment has been changing globally, we have invested significantly in our compliance professionals, and with over 2,000 professionals around the globe in compliance, but in a compliance engine or platform that allows us to do real-time risk assessment on each transaction, either through a consumer transaction or a business payment, checking that transaction to make sure that there's not a sanctioned individual performing that transaction or receiving the transaction. And then also looking at other things like fraud, making sure that that transaction is not fraudulent or there's a money laundering transaction that's occurring. So that platform that we've built over the last few years has become a truly long-term competitive advantage for Western Union in that the barrier to entry into cross-border payments is fairly high. We have a very broad license portfolio. We have a very advanced compliance capability, and a compute infrastructure allows us to move money in minutes and move money in a compliant way. And so with a customer experience that if you look in the app stores around the globe, we are one of the highest rated financial services application in the marketplaces, both in the Android store and the Apple store. So we put a lot of focus on the customer experience, but at the same time, meeting the demands of our regulators and the law around the globe.
And an advantage you have, obviously, there's a lot of venture funds going into fintech at the moment right now, white hot space.
Right.
An advantage you have, as you point out, is a major footprint around the world, a lot of experience, growing technology innovation. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about the offense and defense you're playing relative to a whole panoply of fintech startups around the world who would wish to take over portions of what you do?
So Western Union is the largest global money transmittal company in the world. We have a lot of folks who are very interested in our business. It's a very large profit pool, and you know Western Union is one of the largest there. So what we're seeing is a lot of investment coming into certain areas of our business. For example, Western Union operates 17,000 corridors, and a corridor would be like U.S. to the Philippines or Saudi Arabia to India. We operate 17,000. Our closest competitor only operates in 17. But those profitable corridors is where they're going after, right? And they're really coming at us with different customer experience or coming at us at price. And what we're finding is because of our ubiquity and because of our value we offer and the brand promise, and customers trust our brand, we still have a competitive edge, but we have to be very vigilant in making sure that we're focused on the customer experience, staying competitive. And we're really using technology to interface with our customers, both in retail and digital, and with businesses as well. We've created some new technologies for our business clients, and it's a product called Edge, which allows us to have technology for businesses who have cross-border payments to make. They can inject our technology into their financial platform, allowing them to initiate cross-border payments on our platform from their financial platforms. So from a competitive landscape, there's a lot of them. But many of them are focused on what I call domestic money transfers. And there's a very low barrier to entry for domestic money transfer. So if I want to send you $10 in the United States, it's a very low barrier to entry. There's very little regulation regarding domestic. As soon as you cross a border, it's a very high barrier to entry. So most of the investment and the noise and the hype is around domestic. That's not where the real problems are, and from my perspective, real opportunity. And cross-border is where the real challenges are. And so as a CTO and head of operations, I'm focused on looking at technology and capabilities that solve problems at the last mile and making it easier for consumers in the last mile to perform a transaction. And give you an example, we've been investing in stage technology where a consumer can stage a transaction, and let's say they actually want a deal in fiat currency or cash. They can stage the transaction and go into a retail location, and the transaction's ready to go. They just complete the transaction physically in a retail location, if the consumer wants that. We're also enabling many different payment types in our platform, so that, let's say you're in Germany and you want to use the payment type Sofort to fund a transaction. We've enabled that on our platform. That's on the send side. And then on the receive side, we have many different receive options. Receive it on a mobile wallet. You want to receive it in cash. You want to receive it on your bank account. You want to top up it on a mobile phone. Those types of things, and having features and functionality, is really what's allowed us to be the number one in our game.
You've mentioned a couple of different places that one of the reasons why customers and partners would wish to engage with you is from a security perspective. Mm-hmm. Certainly a topic you know well from having also been a past group president of support and services and CIO at Symantec as well. You've already begun to talk about, and would love to peel back the onion further if you wish to, with regard to the security implications for your customers, but also thinking about safeguarding your own company's assets. Mm-hmm. This is one of the big challenges of a modern technology executive. What approach do you take?
So let's just focus on the consumer first. So one of the things we do is we use a concept called defense in depth. Many layers of security, where from the moment a consumer starts interacting with Western Unions through our mobile application, as soon as they're registering, we're capturing device IDs, fingerprinting the device, we're capturing data on the individual, we're capturing data on their location, and building a profile around that so that we can, as that consumer interfaces with us, if there's any variant to that data point or data points, we're finding that we can use that to trigger additional fraud and risk engines and fraud rules, and that's allowed us to truly have a real-time risk assessment on a transaction using all of these data points. Now, from our own infrastructure, we have defense in depth again. We don't have every last tool you can think of, but we have, from what I feel, industry best-in-class tools to protect our infrastructure. We have really focused our attention on operationalizing security here at Western Union, training our employees around what phishing attacks look like, how do you use the technology effectively, appropriate behavior. We train our contractors that work with us as well around information security so that they know their proper way to handle our data, things that they can and can't do. And then we have tools that monitor behavior of our employees and our contractors that are servicing our infrastructure. These are really critical for us to have many capabilities. We also have single pane of glass. We have a security operations center that allows us to monitor all of our infrastructure and interactions that are coming in from our consumers. And if we start to see things, our response is what's really critical. There will be a day that things happen, right? And that's kind of the new thing that's happening in information security. It's not if, it's when. And when it does happen, you have to be able to respond quickly and forcefully to stop that attack. And we've really built a team of a great response. And so you have to be vigilant. And I feel really good about our position today, but I have to be vigilant. And I am very frequently asked this question by our board of directors. David, how do you feel about our infrastructure? And then they have auditors come check me. So that's our information security posture.
We're sitting here just south of Denver in your offices, and I would love your perspectives on the tech community here. You've worked in a number of them, including perhaps the leading one on Earth in the Bay Area. What are the advantages of recruiting technology talent, innovative staff in this area as opposed to others in which you've worked?
So what I found interesting, I moved to Denver approximately 4 years ago. And when I joined, this was an area that you could find good technology in engineering and information security professionals. What's happened over the last few years with the dot-com boom reappearing in California, it has gotten so expensive to live in San Francisco and the Bay Area. We're finding many companies moving and creating operating centers or centers of excellence in other locations. And Denver and Boulder have become a really hotbed for amazing talent. What we're finding is millennial talent, real new capability appearing here in the marketplace. The governor of Colorado has stated that 4,000 people are moving to Colorado on a monthly basis. So there's a high influx of people coming in, and a good portion of those people coming to Colorado are technologists. And so that's allowed me to really tap into a marketplace of relevant skills, new capabilities and allowed us to drive a lot of this innovation here in Colorado. And we also have a center in the Bay Area in California, and we also have a center in Lithuania, Vilnius, Lithuania, for our engineering.
I know that you're also on the board of CoreSite Realty Corporation. You have been since 2010. A lot of CIOs, a role you once had, have the ambition of becoming board level, of joining boards, of assisting them both in areas of risk mitigation, like security, increasingly a board level topic, as you've already mentioned, but also innovation and the various ways in which that can be applied using technology, depending upon what the company is and how it's going to apply it. I wonder if you could talk a bit about the path towards becoming a board-level technology executive, the sorts of things from your career, your own ambition, that led to that sort of an opportunity.
So I've been very fortunate to be a part of CoreSite and the board as an independent director. The company is a data center REIT that's very focused in the United States on developing state-of-the-art data centers with capabilities, cloud-based capabilities in those data centers. I had the opportunity to meet some recruiting individuals who were in the marketplace looking for a CIO that had a business edge, in the sense that every role that I've had, I've always been very business focused on what business problems are we trying to solve, how do I use technology to solve that business problem, and then bringing a team together that is very focused on innovation and driving business value. And I, in the marketplace, have had the opportunity to talk about that publicly, keynote speeches, and I've had a platform to be able to talk about it and share those results. And by sharing those results publicly, you get a lot of scrutiny from peers, you get a lot of input from folks, and you get a lot of press who look at that and say, you know, there's something different here. And when I had the opportunity at CoreSite, they were really looking for a CIO that understood security, understood the enterprise, understood data centers, understood the real challenges that were being faced in the technologist role, and knew how to go to market to sell to CIOs and to sell to CTOs. And so my role on the board as an independent director is clear. I have a fiduciary responsibility, and I take that very seriously. At the same time, my role is to help CoreSite understand the marketplace, understand things that in our product portfolio, what we need to meet the needs of CIOs and CTOs, and how can we make a product that's truly competitive. And so that input I have into the company and the management team there is very receptive to that, my thoughts. And I do spend time opening the doors for a CoreSite sales team. If I have a peer or a friend or a colleague in the industry who's looking for data centers, I clearly say, you might want to look at CoreSite and present an opportunity. So it is a lot of work to be on a board. And I will tell you that you really do have to take that role very seriously. It is something where the regulatory environment has put a lot of pressure on boards of directors, and it is not something you should be doing for fun. It is something that is a lot of hard work. There's a lot of return. Mentally, for me, I get a lot of reward in interacting with the other board members and management. The management team at CoreSite is tremendous, and they have done a great job in building a great product, and growth has been the focus there, and meeting customer needs.
From being on a board, are there insights you're bringing back, despite the fact that it's a very different business? Seeing the board level discussion from a different lens than the ones that you participate in here?
Right.
What sort of information are you bringing back, or advantages do you take as a result of that?
So most CIOs and CTOs that I know around the globe have a big responsibility in reporting out to their boards of directors and to their CEO. And so you have a lot of time spent preparing management presentations, presenting the status of IT and information security to the board. In my role as an independent director of CoreSite, I take that hat off and I put a board member hat on and ask questions of management that I typically get asked by my board. And so I'm basically flipping roles. I can ask insightful questions of the CTO at CoreSite and of the CEO around information security or things that I might be concerned about for our customers and in the product. And that's allowed us to have a more advanced program, because I bring questions to the boardroom that challenge management on their programs, their diligence, and I can offer suggestions as well. And I'm not management at CoreSite. I'm there as a board member. I represent the shareholder, and my job is to make sure that the management team is using shareholder assets effectively and driving value for shareholders, and that's my focus.
You've talked a bit about some of the innovations that you're ushering in here at Western mm-hmm. Union. What are the ways that you use to stay current, or the ways in which you kind of keep your fingers on the pulse of what is developing that may be of interest or relevant to the organization?
So when I was in Silicon Valley, in my previous roles, I typically had a team that was able to stay abreast of innovation, and I was able to interact with the engineering teams who were innovating. When I came to the financial services sector and here at Western Union, I found that I had to adjust. And what I really have done here is leverage the strength of partnerships. And so we have some very strategic partners that provide services to us, and they have innovation engines. So I plug into those, and they provide me input into what they're seeing in the marketplace. In addition, at Western Union, we have placed an investment in a venture capital firm that is out there placing bets on various companies and investing in certain sectors. And that gives me another eye on innovation. And I also have two team members here who are focused on true innovation in our customer experience and in providing better analytics to our chief marketing officer and to our sales leaders around customer acquisition, customer performance, meaning how customers are interfacing with our product. So innovation is really critical for success, and I have to spend a lot of time on that aspect. And I get a chance to interface with our executive team a lot, and I spend a lot of time working with our CEO and our chief marketing officer, who is also our chief strategy officer, sharing insights into what I'm hearing about in the marketplace, what I'm hearing from our partners, and what we're also seeing in this venture capital firm that we've placed some investments.
I mentioned before you've been a CIO many times over. You were at PeopleSoft through that acquisition, then by Oracle as well, and then in Symantec. Mm-hmm. Having had a number of experiences in a number of different industries, some of them high tech, some of them otherwise, how do you see that role evolving? I know it's not your current role, but right. How do you see changes in it, different levels of value or types of value one might provide in having that role? And I'm especially with a lens towards having been a CIO in a company surrounded by technologists, mm-hmm. the way in which you and your team differentiate yourself when you're surrounded by perhaps some people who might think they could do your job better than you can.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have met some of the brightest engineers ever in my career. And what's interesting is they truly do know their craft. And what I do is learn from them on things and their ideas and how that could be applied to business. What business problem are we trying to solve? So in many of the tech companies that I've worked at is I would always represent the CIO perspective. So the engineering team would sell to me internally the proposition, the value proposition of what they're going to go off and create. And I could provide input. Does that solve a problem? Does that really help my area reduce costs, improve productivity, improve customer satisfaction? What are the business metrics that I'm going to be able to shift with this capability? And that allowed me to be a real good business consultant to the engineering teams. Now, what I've found is you have to be very broad. You have to spend a lot of time understanding many different areas of the business so that, give you an example, if you're going to evaluate a marketing tool, I have to be able to represent the value of that to the chief marketing officer. If we're looking at financial tools, I have to be able to have a conversation with the CFO about the financial tools or reporting mechanisms. And so I spend a lot of time across the entire portfolio of technology. And even in the operation of technology, understanding tools that could make my engine run better. You know, can we do things more effectively? Can we have better analytics tools? Can we have higher availability? So as a CIO, having worked in a technology company, yes, the engineers typically think they can do their job better, but I never took that as an insult because it was an input to me, and I could share data back to them on here's how it really works, and what do you guys think about this? Can you make this work better? And the engineers would just eat it up because they then saw a real-world application. And each one of those firms leveraged me to be a mouthpiece to my peers in the industry to share how I used our tools most effectively. And so I could go to another CIO and say, you know, here's how I implemented Symantec for us. Here's how I implemented Oracle for us. Here's how I implemented PeopleSoft for us. And share those best practices. And I've always been straight with my peers in the industry. Problems we encountered, things that they could avoid, things that I would evaluate. And that credibility was important to me. And so as you think about your career as a CIO, finding value in driving business value, bringing new capabilities to the company to drive business metrics, help generate new revenue, help reduce cost, improve productivity. If you're not focused on that, you very quickly be put in the box of a technologist and you're not going to have a seat at the table. And I think that's really critical to be a business executive, to have that broad capability. But I also have to go deep on certain categories because I still have to run the function. So the job is bigger and bigger, but it's also very exciting. I'm always energized, and I've been in this career area for 20 years, and I can see another 20 years ahead of me.
I see a theme sort of running through our dialogue in terms of the ways in which you've captured and leveraged and ushered in innovation here, the ways in which you became sort of board ready and invited to join a board, the ways in which you navigated what might be tricky paths as a CIO in technology firms of not being insular, not just thinking about the internal operation that many CIOs, frankly, still kind of see as their main or maybe total purview, but thinking about external customers and engaging them, thinking about the broader strategic plans of the organization mm-hmm. and the various functional or business units, and finding ways to weave oneself into the narrative of all of the above
right.
to add a different level of value. Is that a fair sort of summation?
It's a fair assessment. In fact, I have, in my career, and many of my peers in the industry have been given responsibility for end-to-end process. You know, as a CIO, CTO, you understand the technology, and you're somewhat of the glue inside of a company. And what we're finding is I've had the opportunity to service customers. I run customer care and operations for the company, and I'm always looking at end-to-end process. How can I make that more efficient? How can I make it streamlined for a consumer, streamlined? And so you really become the operating function of the company, technology and operations. And I see more and more of my peers getting responsibility for back office functions as a CIO. And that bringing those two together, you can drive a lot of efficiency.
I thought we'd close with a conversation about additional trends that are on your radar. We've mentioned a great number of them, whether they're related to security, whether it's related to digital payments and fintech, more generally speaking.
Right.
What other trends are on your roadmap, so to speak, either personally or professionally, the things you're beginning to investigate that you think have some legs?
What I find interesting, in the last year, I have found artificial intelligence and machine learning becoming more critical to what we do. For example, in my operations, we have some tools that are watching processes that are being done manually today, and then that creates a automated script and capability, and then it learns over a period of time. So we're using capabilities that are allowing my human staff to be more effective. At the same time, we have analytical tools that are looking for patterns, and that becomes important in our transactions, looking for fraud patterns or risks in our network. But at the same time, that can be applied to information security. It is becoming harder and harder with the number of events that are happening against our network to find and parse out which one event is negative, which one is a positive. And using AI and machine learning is becoming more critical. The investments are starting to increase in this area. We're seeing a lot of money being put into this area. I do think there's a lot of promise in this space. Mm-hmm. And I am keeping personal attention in this area.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, David Thompson, thank you so much for a great conversation about your career, about all the things you're doing here and your multiple roles at Western Union. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Excellent. Things we didn't talk about that you'd wish to?
One area that I've been driving innovation here
yeah.
for ourselves,
yeah.
making ourselves more efficient. One thing we found in the last year, and I mentioned it briefly about banks who are starting to de-risk and get out of this space and have been having conversations with us. And we've been able to sign some banks where we're white labeling our cross-border payment service. So our innovations are becoming more and more critical or an opportunity for us to offer them to other financial institutions. So we've created a few products in this space. We've created WooConnect, which is an API, REST API technology using our cross-border platform to offer peer-to-peer payments, cross-border peer-to-peer payments, mm-hmm. and we've signed a contract with Viber, WeChat, and we're continuing to see a pipeline of large social media and messaging platforms who want to offer financial services, but they don't want the risk. And so we have created a very unique platform based on the things we built for ourselves. And so that innovation, we're now able to take that externally and bring new clients to Western Union. We've also created another product which allows us to, for financial institutions who really don't want it to take the risk, we're providing a white label service where we can bring our cross-border payment service into their online platform where you might be on your bank's website and doing a cross-border transaction. It looks like it's coming from your bank, but it's truly our rails and our capability. And that is exciting for me to say, look, we built it for ourselves. We've really tuned this, and now it's at a stage where external firms are willing to pay us for that capability. And it's bringing new customers to Western Union. And so that's exciting for me to see the innovations have a life outside of Western Union.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations.